Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Meinard et al. Titled, Wave Potential and the One-Dimensional Windkessel as a Wave-Based Paradigm of Diastolic Arterial Hemodynamics. This article published online May 30th, 2014. My guests today are Associate Editor Masafumi Kitakaze, Lead Author Jonathan Meinard, and Expert Berend Vesterhoff. Let's get started.
This is Masafumi Kitakaze, and I'd like to start the podcast for the excellent original article of Dr. Meinard and Smulich, entitled Wave Potential and the One-Dimensional Windkessel as a Wave-Based Paradigm of Diastolic Arterial Hemodynamics. First of all, Jonathan, please summarize your work here, please.
Sure, Masafumi. Yes, the paper addresses some recently debated aspects of wave separation analysis. Wave separation is generally considered the gold standard for assessing pressure and flow waves in the arterial system. However, when using the technique, we almost always focus on systolic wave profiles. During diastole, wave separation produces so-called self-cancelling flow waves. Accounting for these waves, I'd say, has been a key issue in the recent debate. So the big question is, what do these self-cancelling waves mean? Are they perhaps an artifact of wave separation? In one of our figures, we showed that if the heart is stopped, the forward and backward components of flow decrease, as one might expect, but then they cross over and increase up to some apparently meaningless asymptotes. So this certainly highlighted a problem, but it also got us thinking. Wouldn't it make more sense if the wave components asymptote to zero after a long period of asystole? So this led to the idea that the absolute values of the wave components are not arbitrary, as has been thought for many years, but actually have a physical meaning and can be calculated. So a key idea that enabled this was a new concept called wave potential. The idea is that wherever there is a spatial gradient of wave potential, waves are produced. And as well as this, the paper proposes a mechanism to explain where these self-cancelling waves come from, which we might get to a bit more later. But overall, the study showed that a physical explanation for these self-cancelling waves is possible, and that in a sense, we no longer need to view these results of wave separation as something to perhaps brush under the carpet.
Okay, thank you very much for your brief summary of your excellent papers. So, Berend, please provide an impression of this paper to Jonathan.
Masafumi, Kara, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to discuss this paper. And Jonathan, I think it is really a superb paper. Congratulations on that, and I really enjoyed reading it. And I think it's a great contribution to the field of waveform analysis, where we try to understand the relationships between pressure and flow and what's going on with wave travel in health and disease, and ultimately trying to perhaps find the optimal treatment for patients fighting cardiovascular disease. So, Jonathan, thank you for your short explanation of your paper. My first question to you would be, you have this wave potential that you introduce. What gave you the idea for that?
Thanks, Berend, for your comments. Yeah, actually, the paper itself follows the same path of logic I used to come up with the idea of wave potential. We designed a series of numerical models, each one slightly more complex than the last. The simplest of these was a single pressurized elastic tube that drained into an unpressurized tube after removing a barrier. And what we found was that even before removing the barrier, we could apply wave separation on the non-pulsatile signals to predict the size of the waves that arose after removing the barrier. So this naturally led to the idea of wave potential. And what this idea means for wave separation is that the absolute values of the wave components have a physical meaning, and that this meaning is wave potential. So to calculate these absolute values, all we need to know is a quantity called undisturbed pressure, which is simply the pressure that occurs when no wave potential is left in the system. In the circulation, we suggested using mean circulatory pressure, which has been shown to be about 10 millimeters of mercury.
My next question sort of follows naturally then from your undisturbed pressure, for which you use mean circulatory pressure. Now, to get mean circulatory pressure, you have to stop the heart for a considerable time, which is not practical in the clinic, I would say. And you propose to use a value of around 10 millimeters of mercury. What would happen if you would use, instead of measuring the pressure or using an arbitrary value, why not use 0 millimeters of mercury? Would that complicate things or make things easier? What's your idea about that?
Yeah, it's interesting you asked that, because in an earlier draft of the manuscript, we had actually suggested using zero for the reasons that you mentioned. From a physical point of view, one could argue that zero should be used, because even when mean circulatory pressure is reached, someone could still puncture a vessel, and this would lead to flow and waves, which would suggest that wave potential still exists. So if zero is used instead of 10, this will lead to a downward offset in the pressure components of 5 millimeters of mercury, so that whatever the difference is, you would halve it. So this might be negligible in the systemic arteries, but it might be appreciable in pulmonary arteries where mean pressure is much lower. In the end, we suggested using mean circulatory pressure because we thought this might be considered more physiologically relevant, but one could certainly use zero. So we suggested assuming about 10 or 11 millimeters of mercury. This value has actually been measured in several human studies, and it appears that it's not overly variable. So we thought that assuming a value was a fair alternative to measuring it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jonathan. And you mentioned that the circulatory mean pressure is at 0 to 5 or 10. Is that changeable due to the pathophysiological condition, such as atherosclerosis or heart failure or something?
I'm not exactly sure. I know vasoactive agents have been shown, I think, to modify mean circulatory pressure in animal experiments, but we know very little in the human, I would say.
Okay, thank you. Varen, do you have another question?
Thank you, Masafumi. Thank you. Yes, I do have another question. Jonathan, besides numerical experiments in your paper, you also presented data of studies in sheep. What did these data reveal about self-cancelling waves?
Yeah, one of the main predictions coming out of the modelling studies was that the self-cancelling waves were ultimately caused by reflection and re-reflection of the late systolic forward expansion wave, which is related to ventricular relaxation. And this result hadn't really been obvious to us, so we were delighted when we found confirming evidence of it in the sheep studies. So the first thing we found was that there was a very good correlation between the energy of the forward expansion wave and the rate of diastolic pressure decay. And we also constricted the descending aorta with a snare, and this introduced a discrete reflection site, just like we had in some of our numerical experiments. What we found was that, just as in the numerical models, a series of decaying forward and backward waves occurred immediately after valve closure. Now, the pressure effects of these waves appeared to underlie the exponential pressure decay, just as we predicted in the models. So, of course, under most circumstances, we only see the combined or smoothed out accumulation of many, many small reflections that occur throughout the arterial network. And that's why we normally don't see these discrete waves. We see a smooth diastolic pressure decay.
Jonathan, maybe a final question. You talk about wind castles in your paper. You talk about, you introduce maybe a new wind castle, which is called a one-dimensional wind castle. So wind castles, in my idea, are always lumped models. And can you explain this one-dimensional wind castle that you introduce?
Yeah, sure. The idea of the arterial wind castle, I think the key idea is that blood volume is stored in the low impedance large arteries and then discharged through the small resistance arteries, which have a high impedance. And of course, the lump model does a very good job of predicting this behavior. But what we tried to highlight in our paper was that one-dimensional models also predict this behavior. And this shouldn't be too surprising because, of course, the real arterial system is a lot like a one-dimensional system. So in one of our numerical experiments, we connected a low impedance tube to a high impedance tube, just as in the arterial system. And we showed that this circulatory arrangement can lead to a series of decaying forward and backward expansion waves that progressively empty the arterial reservoir. Now, we showed also how this one-dimensional wave behavior can be mathematically approximated by the classical two-element wind castle. In other words, by an exponential decay curve governed by compliance and resistance. So what this suggested is that conceptually, the lumped Winkessel model can be considered a kind of subset of the wave description.
Okay, Jonathan, thank you very much for your great contribution. We can understand completely what you have done, and I hope that your research goes well in the future. Thank you very much, Jonathan, and also thank you very much, Berend. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.